the entire world can share the how they can develop their economy by implementing green growth policy for their national economic development. So in that sense, there is a still pretty good room for North Korea to be able to play. And I've been seeing the North Korean delegations in the negotiation, and two of them have been always quiet, but I'm hoping that we can find a better way to engage them into this context. And then as I am taking the microphone, I would like to comment on the issue related to green growth policy at the same time nuclear security summit next year in Seoul. So there has been some discussions in South Korea that how we can utilize a nuclear security summit next year in Seoul. And I understand that the prior meeting in Washington, D.C. was focusing on the nuclear security issue a lot. But I'm hoping that without addressing the issue arising from the Fukushima accident, we cannot move forward from green growth policy point of view. And so in this context, I'm hoping that we can also deal with nuclear safety issue so that we can not only deal with nuclear security issues, also safety issues at the same time, so that we can better utilize the nuclear security summit meeting in the context of implementing green growth policy next year. And I do hope that my U.S. colleagues can work together on this matter with the Koreans so that we can bring up some tangible results out of that summit meeting next year in Seoul. Thank you.
I'm going to make any additional comments. Okay, well, let's adjourn. Please thank our,
We'd like to go ahead and reconvene for our luncheon speech. If I could have everyone's attention. We're going to go ahead and start. We have an opportunity to look at a practical case study in U.S.-Korea cooperation on green growth, looking at a specific project that's going on between Republic of Korea and the state of Illinois. It's my pleasure to introduce to you Matthew Summey. He is the president of the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition, and he's been engaged in fostering public partnerships that can quickly mobilize when opportunities arise to secure resources for research, development, and innovation. Prior to joining the coalition, he has worked with the City of New York. He also is a former staffer in the U.S. Senate and has also been a consultant. Very happy to have him here to talk about some of his group's work with their ROK on testing some technology in the smart grid area. We turn it over to you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Try to be a little more conversational, if we will. I'm a Midwesterner, so try to keep it as informal as possible. So during the presentation, if you have questions about anything, I think we're close to being back on track, so we have time. So feel free to interrupt me. But what I want to do is walk through the anatomy of how something like the green growth strategy can be implemented or deployed in partnership with U.S. entities. So the Illinois-Korea relationship actually starts in a very interesting way. The Han River and the Chicago River happen to be sister rivers. Nobody knows who signed that agreement or when, but our governor, every single time he greets a delegation from Korea, he was once there when he was lieutenant governor, will only talk about what an important agreement that was, because what it has done is lead to great cooperation on a number of fronts. He also wanted me to share some news that when, and he says when, free trade agreement is enabled and enacted, he wants to be the first U.S. governor to visit Korea. So please share that news. All right. So this specific collaboration starts in really November, December of 2009. We had researchers at Argonne National Laboratory and a number of our universities that were doing smart grid work with Korean counterparts and were consulted on some of the Jeju Island activities. Based on that, the idea of developing an MOU to have global cooperation around smart grid development activities emerged. And in January of 2010, we had a delegation of about 15 individuals led by Warren Ribley, who's the director of the Illinois Department of Commerce, travel to Seoul, and as part of the World Smart Grid Forum, we signed an MOU that really had three major thrusts to it. Look for ways to have innovation in attacking climate change. So here's a place where you have convergence around a number of issues. In our state, and particularly in the city of Chicago, you had the Climate Action Plan. 70% of greenhouse gas emissions in the city of Chicago come from our building stock. How were we going to address that? Were there technological or policy-driven activities to make that happen? And what other ancillary services, as we start to talk about distributed generation and enabling things, what would those mean at an implementation level? Second, just like many of the speakers before, economic development is absolutely a strong part of what we're trying to achieve. But it's not purely about the R&D portion of it. It's about, in a U.S. market, particularly in a global city like Chicago, where there's a huge services sector, what intellectual capital and human capital can also be developed and pursued. And then the third part of it, of course, is R&D collaboration. We have world-class universities, as does Korea. They were already working together. What ways could we leverage those relationships to push things a little bit further? And so we established a joint collaboration through the MOU, and the focus of that work, actually, I'm just going to put this down so that I don't keep advancing. Was built on what are the relationships or the strengths of Illinois and Korea? And it really came down to two major factors in this space. Similar objectives and complementary assets. The complementary assets side of it is the most important because while we had similar R&D infrastructure, what we offered were various and varying markets in the way that things could be attacked. In particular, as was mentioned previously, Korea is a monopoly market when it comes to utility and generation activities with no, with the exception of KPX, which is now starting to do the trading, functioning energy markets. In Illinois, we're a deregulated state, depending on your definition of deregulation, but we are decoupled from our generation sources and our transmission sources. And in Northeast Illinois in particular, we're part of the PJM market territory. So what that allowed us to do was look for places where there are real-time revenues that, through the convergence of technological interests, we could develop some very real and very specific projects. But at the end of it, on the corporate side of it, it's the $186 billion global market that ultimately matters. All of our work has been based to date on what we call a problem-centered approach. So just like the green growth focus has had a call to action or a goal statement, so has our work. And it's about what are the appropriate business models that can leverage or use converging technologies? What kind of analysis can we do to demonstrate where there might be ways to achieve payback if you're talking about retrofits, where you might be able to put a price on some of the greenhouse gas reductions in terms of the impacts it could have as it flows through the system? Those are the ways that we've tried to think about this as the problem-centered portion of this. But at the end of it, again, it all came back to, is there a market that could engage our individual companies, and how could we work with global partners to fill in gaps in knowledge or offer a physical environment where we could design projects to achieve? I briefly touched on PJM before, but this is an important slide because it frames ultimately where we're going to be able to move in this collaboration, which has a number of projects, but they're all driven by the transition of energy management in the U.S. from the demand side, or from the supply side to the demand side. So as individual commercial entities have the ability to achieve greater efficiencies, what are the economics that are behind that? PJM last year, in their forward markets, which are three-year markets for balance, paid out $512 million in demand response resources. That is a very significant market. That's actual cash that is now available if you can figure out ways to do it. Missing is that the moment-to-moment regulation markets or ancillary services portion, nobody's been able to achieve a way to use assets to do balancing of the load. And so there's the economic opportunity that we're constantly pushing. Who are our partners in this effort? It's classic public-private partnership. You have a series of NGOs that have done work in consumer awareness, environmental activities, economic development. You have public sector entities that are interested in the market distinction and the economic achievement portion of it. And you have major industrial players that are looking to be part of ultimately what will be a systems approach to achieve all these things. No one product or no one solution will dominate the market, so why not be part of as many teams as possible? We have also tied in many of the corporate and research interests that have been doing work in this space for a long time but are looking for new markets. In particular, our building owners and managers. And you think about what retrofits mean, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Argonne National Laboratory, the LG Chem battery that's going into the Chevy Volt is based on technology developed at Argonne. So long-standing relationships and ties there. But when we get to community energy storage solutions and other things, having that base of knowledge will absolutely matter. And Comcast may seem like an unusual partner in this, but if you think about ultimately what may happen in smart grid, many of the solutions are going to be driven by network-driven functions, particularly in-home management systems, but also as you get to distributed generation, you'll need a communications backbone and protocols, as well as settling functions when you get to net metering that utilities currently don't have. On the Korean side, again, classic public-private partnership. MKE has been a lead driver, but all of the partners, many of whom have been mentioned today, have played an integral role in the intellectual development of specific projects, helping us to assess where activities or gaps were succeeding or occurring on the Jeju test bed, where we may have had some differences in our market that could be applied, and we could use some of those learnings and correct them in Illinois or vice versa, as well as the industrial players who have either equipment or intellectual activity that they're interested in engaging in. Through the course of this, we've actually entered into now 9 different MOUs. I will not go through all of the MOUs, but they're based in 3 buckets: project-based, business development, and then business development letters of intent. The project-based are all in action now. We've got about $6 million in coordinated activity already in motion, much of it related to R&D testing or validation. So there are researchers from ETRI that are now on campus at the University of Illinois to work on network resiliency and security issues so that as we transition to the digitized grid, we've thought about what those elements are. There are researchers on campus at the Illinois Institute of Technology who are working on the next generation of building energy management systems that can manage assets across multiple properties rather than a single property. There are also a number of Korean engineers that are participating in what ultimately was a ARRA-funded initiative, although it was underway. The Illinois Institute of Technology has a global smart grid workforce training center that started as an effort to assess what the workforce needs would be. So in an era of smart grid, you will not have individual meter readers, you'll have network engineers who are looking at things and doing the assessment of what the workforce needs would be. But ultimately, it's turned into a certificate and will be, in time, a master's degree program. And we're doing advanced training, and it's attracting attention and partnership from around the globe. And then the Smart Buildings Initiative, which is the core part of what we're working on. I'll come back to that in a minute. So to date, as I mentioned, we've got about $6 million in projects going, the largest of which is to the bottom of it, where we have co-investment from the state of Illinois and the Korean government through MKE. And the goal of the project is to do really one thing. It's to leverage the demand response resources available from PJM markets to manage load using buildings essentially as virtual batteries. So to put that into a very simple context, you develop a network operating center. You tie in the building energy management systems of multiple buildings. You do modest upgrades in terms of technology to anything in a building that can have momentum. Could be an elevator. You can do variable frequency drives on anything that can be sub-metered. And it becomes the third week in July, which is our peak in Illinois. And it's the middle of the day, and PJM needs load back. They send a signal out through this. The network operating center then sends the signal to individual systems in individual buildings, and you bring down load or you cycle it back up. And that way, rather than firing up the natural gas peaker plant, you found a new way to use existing technology driven by a demand response revenue opportunity to achieve balance in our electrical grid, which is an ongoing and very important thing. The backside of that at a regulatory and policy framework has tremendous implications, not just in Illinois, but globally, because in those markets where you have great density, the ability to add new generation is exceedingly complex. It's very hard to site new wind farms in Illinois. If you do, they are a long way from the population and energy demand centers. That requires additional transmission infrastructure. So these very early solutions in the renewables space have become even more difficult. Once we get to scalable PV, you'll have slightly different scenarios there. But here's a way to use demand-side management to tackle the need to address the balance of our energy system and hopefully bring down costs because the customer will be managing it. On the building side of it, there's an additional incentive, which is building managers want to have the most green, efficient building because it has a premium in the marketplace. So if you're in a market like Chicago, where you have literally hundreds of high-quality Class B, Class A office space, you need a way to distinguish yourself. If you're about to sign a 500,000-square-foot lease for 20 years, you want to be able to offer your tenant some other incentive. So this is a way to say, we're the most efficient building. You'll have some capacity to manage energy in it. That could potentially bring down lease costs. And ultimately, the building owners and managers like a model like this because it's a new revenue stream to them as well. And with a single network operating center, you could potentially manage buildings globally. And then the next side of that is, as technology does start to evolve and you've got energy storage capacity and you start to address the needs of balance with intermittent resources such as wind, you have a tool in individual buildings where you can pull in those resources or draw them out. Ultimately, where that's going to matter is in electric vehicles as they start to integrate into the decks in these big buildings. We've got a big building that has kind of moved in that. We've got some smaller scale buildings that by design, are projected to be net positive, but nothing at scale of a 60 story high rise or greater. You know, and the kinds of buildings that we're talking about are about a megawatt of load too. So through this collaborative work, we've actually succeeded in having attention drawn to the work and the thought leadership that's there. And building on that, we've been able to secure some other resources, but also start to attract startup companies in this sphere so that we can have a smart grid cluster, which is really driven by IT strategies, software, switching, and modest build-out of grid systems. But we have a designation through a competitive award with the U.S. Small Business Administration, so one of 10 designations as a regional cluster, but the only one in smart grid. We also secured resources from the U.S. Department of Energy through a partnership to develop mentoring programs to help grow clean tech businesses. And then we recently submitted another application that's based on the development of a $5 million proof of concept fund so that we can help early stage thinkers either in a research environment or in companies grow and accelerate their activities. So as we go forward, we're also now looking at other projects that can leverage the interest of both our Korean partners as well as our Illinois partners. We have many communities that are interested in being not necessarily first movers but fast followers, and so they want community energy solutions that can be everything from the deployment of electric vehicle infrastructure to building management systems. So we're in the process now of working with actually LS Industrial Systems and a number of other partners and the Village of Oak Park, Illinois, to design some community-wide solutions. And we're going to look for other ways to do that in the commercial and industrial sectors as well. And then in November, as part of Smart Grid Week on Jeju, we signed a sister state agreement with the special governing authority of Jeju Province, and we're exploring additional opportunities to build collaborations on that. On the phase two partnerships, I mentioned Oak Park, but in particular, what we're really looking for is opportunities to go after three spaces: home and network automation. Oak Park happens to be a community that has 100% AMI penetration. The initially funded pilot, which ComEd is instituting, expired in April. So we have 100,000 buildings with, or we have 100,000 customers. It's about 20,000 buildings that have AMI infrastructure. So what things can we do with that? And home energy automation certainly is an interest. Our market is in the process of building out EV infrastructure. We'll have, by the end of March of next year, 72 locations with level 2 and 3 spread throughout the Chicago metro area. And we're also building out a corridor between Chicago and Springfield along I-55. In the middle of that is a community, Bloomington Normal, previously best known as the home of State Farm Insurance, but it also happens to be the home of Mitsubishi's only U.S. manufacturing facility for vehicles. So they've added a deployment phase to put their iMEV vehicle into Illinois, so we'll actually have EV product, and we're encouraging all other manufacturers, but we'll have some of the densest network available there. And the last thing not in this slide I want to mention is that we also have a pending piece of legislation that in part this collaboration helped to push. About 30 days ago, our General Assembly passed the Power Grid Modernization Act. We have two major utilities, both in different regional transmission footprints in Illinois, but it would require both over the course of 10 years to completely build out an enabled smart grid structure. That piece of legislation has a price tag of about $2.2 billion. It is funded through rate hikes. So it is sitting on our governor's desk, and he believes in the subject and cares deeply about infrastructure investment, but is struggling with what to do with the legislation because the only place to go for cost recovery on this in a regulated environment is to the ratepayers. And we don't know what will happen with that legislation. If it is signed, we'll move very quickly on a statewide level to having what we know or what we believe will be the most advanced power infrastructure in the United States and probably second only to Ontario and Canada, which is moving at a faster clip. So a number of good things that are one-offs have happened as a result of this collaboration, but at the beginning of it, it's about global partnership, about the $186 billion market for smart grid services and products, And it starts with collaboration and aligning mutual interests, because there isn't one effort that's going to move any market or that's going to solve any policy problem. It's really a collection of dozens, hundreds, if not thousands of various solutions. And those can happen in Asia. They can happen in the United States, but better if we're aligned and working together to achieve the bigger policy objective of tackling the climate issues, but using market-driven forces to do it. Thanks.
Thank you for that presentation. I have one question to start us off, and that is, you talk about the $186 billion global market. What is the way in which the coalition in Illinois can participate outside of the local energy market? I just don't understand what are the potential follow-on advantages.
Great question. So if you look at our corporate partners, most of them are global firms. What they're looking for is to demonstrate or validate some of their efforts and then use that as a marketing and sales technique to put the product in other places. But both within the Illinois Institute of Technology and the University of Illinois, there are two of the remaining master's degree programs in power systems engineering. So part of what has also started to happen, and we think will help our companies take their products globally, is the thought leadership and talent being trained at these two institutions are being put through a course of work that is about the next generation of electricity management and utility management. And as a result, they're coming out of the programs with slightly more entrepreneurial thinking, and we're absolutely fine exporting that intellectual capital as well.
Other questions? Greg.
Matthew, Illinois is home to one of the country's larger Korean-American communities. Has the Korean-American community in Illinois played a role at all in your efforts to engage in this collaborative efforts with Korea? And if so, can the Korean-American community in this area learn some lessons from this, because we have at least 150,000 Korean-American residents of the greater Washington, D.C. area?
Sure. Great question. I would like to say that it's somehow been managed and institutionalized. There has been a number of civic activities where we've provided briefings to the Korean-American community in Chicago. KOTRA and the MKE offices in Chicago have been deeply involved. They've actually put staff in Chicago to manage and work on the effort. It's made a tremendous difference, and without those levels of engagement to help build the public profile, but also to demonstrate that Korean opportunity to get market hold in the United States is very real and can be achieved in non-traditional formats, has helped to increase interest in that community. How that translates, I think, is probably still an open question. But through forums such as this, that knowledge spreads.
My question is that to what extent that Illinois have some sort of relationship with the federal government in the promoting the, these initiatives? Do you have some collaborative works with the federal government on this matter, or it's Illinois' own?
Argonne is a DOE, U.S. DOE managed facility. They've been deeply involved in the collaboration, and that has tied us back in all the way up to the Secretary's office. Funding, however, has not come through DOE for any of these activities other than to support ongoing research. There's a little bit of U.S. DHS money at the University of Illinois on the network security and resiliency projects that the Attached Institute of ETRI is also now engaged with. But by and large, we were, in this space at least, considered a loser, if you will, in the stimulus funding. None of our utilities were able to secure significant resources. Small dollar pilots for AMI build out at a municipal utility in Naperville, one in Pontiac, and a little bit for ComEd. And as a result of not winning those proposals, it made everyone a little bit hungrier, but it also left some very good, well-thought-out plans on the table that happened to be available at the time that we started the discussions with MKE.
This question overlaps with the one that has just been raised here. What was the genesis of this collaborative relationship between Illinois and Korea? What triggered it off in the first place? And have you encountered any obstacles in Korea or in Illinois to this promotion of the collaborative relationship between the two? And second question, reflecting upon your own experiences with Korea, do you think that this can be replicated elsewhere in the United States? What is the broader applicability of those experiences to other parts of the United States and Korea relationship?
Sure. Origins of the collaboration, let's start with that. There are a handful of MKE staff who studied at Illinois universities. And it was based on their relationships as well as a visiting scholar and researcher at Argonne. They were monitoring activities in our state. Our Public Utility Commission, the Illinois Commerce Commission, was in the process of developing a framework for how smart grid could be evaluated through cost-benefit analysis for potential deployment, and based on some of the papers and activities that came out of that, the discussions started, were filtered back to MKE, and over the course of about 6 to 8 weeks, a collaboration came together, and we had a delegation visit Korea, and the MOU was signed. Challenges and opportunities and barriers, if you will, to implementation. Initially, our business community, very candidly, was rather skeptical. What does this mean? We've seen pilot and demonstration efforts happen before. Is there really funding behind this? And the skepticism was in equal parts applied to the state of Illinois. We were going through a very difficult political transition. We had just changed governors under very unfortunate circumstances, and our state was in very difficult fiscal straits as well. And so the skepticism toward the state of Illinois was, is this a gimmick? And on the Korean side, it was, what's the motivation? But as soon as all of the parties sat in a room, talked about what the opportunities were, put actual numbers on the table for what co-investment could look like, in what form and for what products, the skepticism very quickly evaporated. On the question of, could this be replicated to other markets? Absolutely. But I would say there have to be two main conditions to that. The first is there has to be an R&D element to this. And the reason that R&D element is important is because for us, we were at the right place at the right time in terms of being able to use existing technologies that were converging to solve a problem and address climate change. As we move to more complex issues in green growth, where additional R&D will be required, improving PV arrays, addressing transmission issues, helping sensor activities, wireless and network activities, et cetera. The challenge and the opportunities are greater, but also not as evolved, we believe, in the technology side of it. So if the R&D collaboration is there, both the engineering talent and the market interests would very quickly follow in many markets in the United States, and we believe it could be a very good platform for that. However, we'd also like to see our collaboration grow before it goes to other places.
Any other questions?
Who was the mayor you were talking about?
The mayor?
Yes.
When we started the collaboration, it was Mayor Daley.
Yes.
It is now Mayor Emanuel.
Uh-huh.
And he is engaged in this. In fact, in his 96-page transition document, some of the work was referenced in saying that the Climate Action Plan, which was a Mayor Daley initiative, must be expedited and it must be viewed through the lens of being able to achieve economic development objectives, some of which are being achieved through this collaboration.
Any other questions? Well, please join me in thanking Matthew for coming and giving us a very practical example of how the U.S. and South Korea can cooperate on issues related to green growth. I think it was an excellent way to end this discussion. So thank you very much.